This is part two of the podcast for Wednesday, July 5th, 2017, ethics. So now, sometimes I just drone on and on until I start foaming on the mouth and fall over backwards. So apologies for that. But I wanted to hear your question. So I did some review of the basic theories because I thought people might be a little weak in them. But I wanted to hear what questions you might have about the study guide, about anything on the test. And just let me take a question from a student during the break who asked, how many questions will be on the exam? And I believe there are 50. There may be as many as 65. And now I'm just going to actually look here. You should be able to take it in under an hour. I don't think I've had anybody take it over an hour for quite a while. Some of those are true false. Yeah.
So you said true false.
No, they're not. So it's all, you know, what they call objective questions. Let me just, I shall call up the test right now and look at it. I think all of these, I have them down to 50. If nobody takes it this afternoon, I might add some more questions. let's see. Yeah, just 50. So, you know, this is a midterm. There might be some overlap to the questions of what they, the information they're ferreting out. I'll have some quotes. So, I'll say something for quotes, like look at style. If you say, if you see something like, a quote that says something like, I wonder that we think it's so barbarous that a man should eat another. When in our own society, men are thrown into deep, dark dungeons and worried by wild dogs or burned alive or something like that. Don't put like Martin Luther King Jr. Is that how Martin Luther King Jr. sounds? So pay attention to the context clues for style, right? So you think about that. Well, style, it's kind of like antique-y, so it's either Hume or it's Montaigne. I might give you some quotes from some other guy like Bertrand Russell expressing one of these views that we've discussed. So look, if it's an author that we've discussed in class, you should know like generally what the person is about, what their views are, what their style is. So you look at like the things that I'll be asking about is concepts and definitions, and then personalities, like who is part of what theory, who expounded what theory. So you'd have to know like the important philosophers. And then, so the theories, the definitions, the philosophers that expounded them. And then, you know, the pro and con arguments. Those would be like the main things. And then pro and con arguments, and then maybe terms would be like a last thing you should look at. So anything in bold in the text, you should know what that is. So as you're reviewing for and this, if you look at the study guide, that's the sorts of things it asks about. Okay. Questions from other students? No. So some questions will be based on what we did in class here. Some will be in the text. Some will be in both. A lot, I think, will be covered in both. I think it would be really challenging, for example, to read Montaigne's essay and then to you'd have to be, like, really good with your reading comprehension, read it, like, really carefully, reflect on it, and then to answer a question. Like, for example, I don't know if I have in the text that Montaigne's best interpreted as a soft universalist. I think that's one of those according to the instructor questions. So that might be something you get in class that you wouldn't get in the text. Thinking of other things. So it's going to be a mix. There'll be some things that are in class that aren't in the text. There'll be some things, you know, go over your notes and so on. There's some things in the text that I might have just glossed over in class and not covered. I'm trying to think of something I didn't talk much about. I didn't talk much about virtue ethics. You just have to know the definition of that. There might be some other things that I might have glossed over that are in the text. Yeah.
Did you say that the voice recordings you have to ask permission for online?
Oh no, they're on there. There should be like linked in Moodle. Like in I think they're in week two. I just to say like first there's a couple of practice exams, so make sure to take those. The practice exams are just like sample questions. So there's like five, I think one might have 10 questions. Yeah, so, and some of those actual questions may actually appear on the exam, just FYI. So make sure you know them. So take those, the practice tests, go over the study guide, you can listen to the audio recording of the review. Yeah.
And then also on the study guide, it asks, what is Euthyphro dilemma?
Oh, the Euthyphro dilemma.
Can you go over that?
Yeah, so the Euthyphro dilemma can be summed up in a question. So the question is, his dilemma isn't like he's prosecuting his own father for murder. That might be a moral conflict, but that's not the Euthyphro dilemma. So the Euthyphro dilemma is this philosophical problem, and it's, do the gods love things because they're pious, or are things pious just because the gods love them? Right. So that's like the way it's formulated in the dialogue, the kind of Greek mythology type version and the original. So do the gods love things because they're pious, or are things pious because the gods love them? And the problem is, if you say, you know, if the first, then there's some quality. Oops, what happened there? Some quality the gods, you know, recognize in all pious actions. And that quality, you know, will make that some quality, or qualities, I suppose, will make them pious. Or qualities. Might be more than one, right? Not the fact that the gods love them. So if you think about like the things, why do the gods approve of certain things? Is it random? If you say, well, the gods approve of sacrifice. Why? Because sacrifice means giving the gods what they are owed. So the gods do all these wonderful things for human beings, and the human beings show their gratitude by making sacrifice. Okay, why do the gods disapprove of stealing? Well, stealing, why is stealing unholy or impious? Well, it's because stealing takes away a person's personal property, and you should always give the person, a person is, should be given their and allowed to possess their personal property. So maybe like the whole thing would be in terms of what people, giving people what they're owed. So a person is owed their property, it's the fruit of their labor, and it's unjust to deprive them from it. The gods are owed our gratitude, so we make sacrifice because that's what they deserve. So maybe morality is a matter of giving people what they deserve. Well, then the fact that the gods approve of things is not what makes things pious. What makes things pious is you're giving people what they deserve. Now, so you think, okay, well, that can't be it. So then I'm going to say it's the second thing. I'll just say, you just take a poll of the gods and say, which of you gods here approve of sacrifice? All the gods raise their hands. Okay. Well, that's just the fact that you took a poll and it was unanimous makes an action pious. And if you would say, which of you gods approves of stealing or wanton murder, and all the gods raise their hand, then stealing and wanton murder would be right. And that seems kind of weird, right? So if the second, then piety is, you know, arbitrary, meaning, you know, anything could be pious. Blaspheming the gods could be pious. I think of some other thing that would be destroying temples could be pious, right? That would be kind of weird that the gods would say they approve of temples being destroyed and sacrifices not being made. But it seems like it's possible. It might make more sense if the gods, like, say all the gods approved of lying. Or even adultery. There's a good one, right? So suppose, like, all the gods were a bunch of adulterers, right? So they all raised their hands saying, we love adultery. So then that would be, like, an obligation of human beings. Or maybe it'd be at least be permissible for human beings to be adulterers. Anyway, it gets kind of weird. You think about, like, just because the gods say it, decree it, that automatically it's just and right and good. If the gods commanded cruelty, or if they love cruelty, would it be your obligation to be cruel? And I think it makes, maybe it's a little more clear in the Judeo-Christian version. So this is the modern kind of Judeo-Christian or God of the philosophers version, which is, does God command things because they're right? Oops. In case you're unclear, this is an abbreviation for the word because. Somebody always asks, so I want to make sure. Does God command things because they're right, or are things right simply because God commands them? This comes up, like, when we talk about, like, the genocides in the Old Testament. And you could say, well, look, this is a problem here for accepting the Old Testament as a revealed word of God. God seems to command the wiping out of the indigenous peoples of Canaan based on, like, the curse of somebody laughing at his father when he's passed out drunken, naked in his tent. Nobody ever says, well, maybe genocide isn't so bad. Or if God commanded genocide, that must automatically be right. I've never heard anybody say that. Why is that? Well, it's because they're thinking, well, there's God's commands, but God has reasons for his commands. And God, if God commanded genocide, first of all, people say, well, I don't think he would, that doesn't seem like the sort of thing God would command. And then maybe if they want to hold on to the Bible as the word of God, they'll try to sort of come up with some explanation. Like, God had a really good reason for commanding genocide in this particular case, even though genocide in general is bad. So they'd say, like, you know, what the young Turks did to the Armenians was bad, and what Hitler did to the Jews was bad, but what the Jews did to the Canaanite was okay. But the story is almost never, oh, because God says so. God gave the command, so that makes it right. So it's wrong for Hitler to command genocide, but it's right for God to do it. Usually there's some explanation as to why it was necessary to preserve the theocratic state of Israel, to preserve the purity of the true religion. There's always some reason given for it. Even in the text, there's reasons given for it. Anything about, like, predestination and free will, it's the same thing. People say, well, how could God send somebody to hell if they're predestined, that their choice is predestined? That doesn't seem fair. And people try to come up with some explanation for why it is fair. And it's really rare, even though you find this in the Bible, it's really rare to find, like, particularly a modern Christian living in America, to say, well, God can do whatever he wants because he's God. And whatever God says goes and is automatically good and right. And if you don't think it is, it's just because you're a dirty, rotten sinner. The Reformed churches in America are very small, and they have that view, but it's not a widespread view. People always want, like, an explanation in terms of the justice of God, trying to square the justice of God with this idea that he predestined certain people to heaven, certain people to hell, and nothing we can do can change his mind. Is kind of a morally troubling view. And it shows that there's a standard of morality that's different from God says so, right?